I'm speaking today with Councilmember Jolanda Jones, who is the incumbent in at-large number 5. Councilmember, this is your first term in office. You were elected in 2007. Tell me what the experience has been like for you so far. Has it been what you thought it would be when you first ran for office?
Actually, yes. I ran for office to be able to help people at a local level. And I don't believe there's any other elected office where you can help people so locally. And so it's been everything I thought it is.
What would you say has been, you know, the accomplishment you're most proud of since being elected?
Wow. There are a number. One of the things I'm really proud of is working with the floodwaycoalition.org to help us undo that ordinance back in 06 that we passed prior to me being elected that I believe to be an unconstitutional taking. And the courts agree that it was an unconstitutional taking, changing that so that we could give people back the value of their properties. I'm extremely proud of that.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, there was an ordinance passed in 06 that basically blamed all the flooding in the city on people who lived in the floodways and floodplains, which were quote-unquote around bayous. So we passed an ordinance prior to me being elected that effectively said that people who lived around the bayous and near bayous were not allowed to rebuild in their homes or rebuild their homes, which, what's the value of your home? The value of your home is what you can, if you can build it to make it be like you want, or when you sell it, what people can do with it. So it effectively gutted the price of people's properties. And for whatever reason, when it was passed back in 06, people thought it would end flooding. Obviously, we still have flooding problems. And I thought that it was an unconstitutional taking. The people who were affected asked me to help them, and we fought long and we fought hard, and we were able to right that. And I'm really thankful for that, because most people's largest asset is their home. And we can't go negatively affecting the value of people's property.
Now, one of the things that we talked about some when you were running in 2007 were issues relating to crime and Houston Police Department and the crime lab. You know, 2 years later, where do you think we stand with that? And how, you know, there's been some talk lately about a regional crime lab that would be independent of HPD. Where do we stand with that?
Well, I proposed a budget amendment for us to get out of the business of a crime lab. I don't think we need to be in that business. I believe it's the equivalent of having a fox watch a hen house. I've been trying to do that since I got here. I proposed a budget amendment last year. I actually wrote an op-ed for the Chronicle explaining how we could pay for it, since most times with great ideas, the problem is how do you fund it. There are a lot of good examples, Bexar County being one, that show that it can be done. So we just need to get into partnership with other jurisdictions and policing agencies that do testing and crime labs, that we need to get out of the business. And hopefully, before my service to this city is over, that will be accomplished. It will be done.
All right. As we are going to be getting a new mayor this fall, we're likely to be getting a new police chief as well. What is your assessment of Chief Hurt's time as HPD chief, and how would you like the next chief to be like him or not like him?
I believe that you should live in the city. I think it's really hard to get a true assessment of what's going on in your neighborhood if you don't live in the neighborhood, and so that troubled me. I obviously have had issues with the crime lab, and that was prior to Chief Hurt, quite frankly. So I'd like to see fresh blood, new blood, because you can't continue to do things the same old way, otherwise you'll get the same results.
Obviously, in the news lately has been issues relating to the Houston Fire Department, and you have been prominent in some of these stories, and I'll talk to you a little bit about that. The first question is, where do we stand with HFD and the issues that have come to light recently concerning incidents of racist and sexist behavior at least one of the stations?
Well, based on information received with my office, I believe it's not just at one station. I do not believe the majority of the men and women of the fire department are racist and sexist. I do, however, equate what happens at some stations at the fire department with having a bully at school. All it takes is one bully to sort of make the environment at the school unsafe. And my hope and my prayer is that we figure out the depth and the breadth of what's going on in the fire department. So, in other words, find out who the racists are, find out who the sexists are, find out who retaliates if you report it, and find out who facilitates it, because you need all of those components in order for it to fester, even if it's a small amount. It's sort of like you see stuff, you hear about people getting beat up with a mob of people around, because no one says anything. Everyone just sort of stands there. They don't necessarily agree with it, but they don't have the courage to stop it. And firefighters are rock stars. I've ridden 24-hour shifts with them. In fact, previous to this interview, I just came back from meeting with a firefighter who asked me if I would come to his station and speak with him, and I did, which is why I'm running late for this interview. And they have a tremendous job. In fact, if I were to be in the public safety arena, I'm almost certain that I would be a firefighter, because I think that they have a really cool job. They save people who have strokes and heart attacks and gunshots and stab wounds and high blood pressure and you name it. They come to us when we are in most need. In addition, they fight fires, and I don't know of many people that want to run into the heat, you know, when everyone else is coming out. And I believe for that reason that we have an obligation to protect the work environment for them and make sure that it's not hostile. You know, we need to get rid of, for example, someone who was over staff services was telling jokes about hunting wetbacks when he would go on vacation down south. That's inappropriate. And even if it was meant as a joke, how do you think Hispanics felt, you know, when they hear those type of things? Or how do you think anyone feels if they have a love for humanity, regardless of where you come from? So we have an obligation to deal with it. And, you know, to the extent someone has to be vocal about it, I will be. Discrimination in any form is unacceptable. And I believe that the reason that discrimination is able to continue is because people don't speak up about it.
You've had some differences of opinion with the president of the firefighters union over some of these issues with the, as you say, the way the matter has been handled, and with the way the employees of HFD have been, you know, treated or are being perceived over all this. Can you comment on that?
Well, in particular, this isn't about any person, not the president of the firefighters union or not. This is about figure out the depth and breadth of what's going on with any racism, with any sexism, with any retaliation, with any facilitation. That's what this is about. And if someone wants to try to make the issue be about me, they're trying to muddy the waters. They're trying to knock us off our game. I'm going to use a sports analogy because I guess once an athlete, always an athlete. But I will not be distracted. I will be steadfast. I have had too many people for me to remember come and tell me stories, and they're basically all the same stories in different places from different people, and we need to fix that. No one should have to go to work and be harassed. I just spoke with a firefighter, and that firefighter, you know, people are pulling aside that firefighter, trying to ask him, you know, what position he's taking when it comes to this issue. Why does that matter when you go to work? Why does that work?
The city has just hired a law firm to investigate what's going on with HFD and
two law firms.
As I recall, you were kind of critical of that. Do you believe that the city's actions so far are sufficient to get at the root cause of the problem and to move towards a solution?
As you know, I voted against that. I believe there are conflicts, inherent conflicts. I believe at least one law firm has very close ties to Arturo Michel, who's the city attorney. That troubles me. Another law firm has someone who was on the Civil Service Commission. Based on what people have shared with me, one of the complaints is about how the Civil Service Commission works. So how can you, if people are critical of what you did, how can you honestly look at it? And quite frankly, as a lawyer myself, we protect who pays us. That's just what we try to do. We have an ethical obligation to fight for our clients. So it concerns me that the city can still use attorney-client privilege for anything that the law firms find. That's really bothersome to me, because if the real exercise is to find out what's there truthfully, why should you ever have to assert attorney-client privilege? And I specifically asked that question because that would have made me feel better about these law firms finding out what was going on, although that's not their expertise. And basically Arturo said that they still could assert that, so that troubles me because they can keep out anything bad. And I don't feel comfortable. Thank goodness I've contacted the Justice Department. They've contacted me back. They've asked me for information. I forwarded it to them. And I just believe that this is like a disease, in that if you don't take an accurate assessment of what it is, you cannot cure it. You cannot root it out. And that's just what we need to do, because firefighters deserve to have as little stress as possible. To the extent they have to deal with stress, it should be from fires or trying to resuscitate people or heart attacks or whatever. It should not be because someone doesn't like you because who you are.
Okay. You're the chair of the Housing Committee.
Yes.
Tell me about what you've been doing, what that committee has been doing, and you know what your goals are going forward with that.
Well, my goals are to become the expert on affordable housing and how you get it built. Some people think affordable housing is just for poor people. It is not. I mean, we have teachers and firefighters and police officers. They're not rich, but they can't afford traditional mortgages. And so there needs to be something in place to allow good, decent, hardworking people to afford homes. And so, yes, that is just really important to me there. I've gone to conferences that focus on affordable housing and how you get it built in an effort to learn how we can do better, because we are under capacity here in the city for, the waiting list for the Housing Authority is 4 to 5 years. That is ridiculous. And I'm very, very, very proud. There have been a lot of complaints about the Houston Housing Authority. We have a task force. We've invited people. We haven't picked the special people. Generally, that's what task force are. They pick, I don't know, whoever the special people are, however you determine who they are. We're allowing anyone who wants to join to join. We understand that people who live in Housing Authority properties have special needs, i.e. they don't have a lot of money. So we are moving from Housing Authority property to Housing Authority property so that people can at least participate at their Housing Authority property, because they don't have money to catch the bus to get there. We hope to have ordinary citizens who are living in the housing authorities to be a part of the task force, as well as people from the housing department, because they work with the housing authority. I've invited people from the housing authority board, because I need decision makers there to actually be in the same room with the people that they are making decisions over. Law enforcement, there have been a lot of complaints about crime. So inviting HPD to come be a part of this, because HPD responds to the crime, and constable's office who actually patrols them, so that we can figure out a collaborative way to deal with these issues that seem to be persistent when it comes to the housing authority. And when this is all said and done, we hope to have recommendations and hope to get them implemented. And so I'm really excited about that, but I've also made it my mission to learn what the HUD regs are. As you know, we've had a lot of issues with HUD. We've had to send money back, $15.5 million since I've been elected, because we don't know the rules. And receiving money from HUD is like living at your mother's house. Your mom has rules whether you like them or not. If she says your curfew is at 8 o'clock, you better be at 8 o'clock. With HUD, you can only spend money in certain ways, and we have not taken the time to learn those ways, as a housing department. And what people don't understand is when we misspend their money, when we do not follow their rules, then we are penalized. Not only are we penalized by having programs that shut down, for example, we had our home funding, which is multifamily building, shut down based on the monitoring report, but we also oftentimes have to repay HUD with non-HUD money. In other words, that means that, yeah, we've got to pay you back the money that we messed off, but we can't pay you back out of the money you gave us. We've got to go to the general fund, which necessarily means that something in the general fund isn't getting funded. And so it's a serious problem. For a while, we weren't repairing seniors' homes. Seniors whose homes are falling down around them. That's pretty serious. So we've got to do a better job if we're going to accept HUD money to learn their regulations, because ultimately the people who are least able to deal with not having the money are the people that are most affected.
You've been a critic of Metro in your time in office as well. There have been some controversies over the way they've gone about building some of their lines, the Harrisburg line and a rail storage facility that the neighbors don't really want. Metro is going; it has just broken ground on the north and southeast lines, and there's still the universities and uptown lines in the pipe. Give me your assessment today of how Metro is doing with this construction and with its overall mission.
I think Metro, and by Metro's own admission, if you said, and at the board meeting, they've done a poor job of spending money comparable to other places. So, in other words, it costs us more to build a mile of rail than it does other places. They've done a poor job of reaching out to minorities and meeting minority goals, which is problematic. They've not done a good job of communicating / dialoguing with the very people that they are supposed to be serving. I know that I served on the initial task force for the line that was over by the University of Houston, and we met for over a year. We met for 2 years trying to give Metro alternatives. I was on the task force. Garnet Coleman, who's a state rep, was on the task force. Ada Edwards, who was a council member, then council member on the task force. A number of people who were really concerned about our neighborhood and how rail would affect it. We wanted rail, but we wanted it to work with our community and not destroy us. We spent over 2 years meeting at Jefferson Robinson Community Center. Metro totally disregarded everything that we said and said, we're going to do this, which is why I voted no on them putting the rail down, because they totally disregarded us. And I don't think you can take taxpayer money without being transparent and shove stuff down taxpayers' throats. So I don't know that I'm a critic so much as I'm an advocate for the people.
What needs to be done to correct some of those problems that you've highlighted?
Well, I actually have a meeting this Friday with Stephen Williams with Metro, and I've asked for some questions to be answered. I hope they're answered. But, I'm a sort of a show-me person, not a tell-me person. So we'll see. They say they're going to do better. I certainly hope they're going to do better, since they're getting so much money, from the federal government. But it doesn't make sense that we only have 7 miles of rail. My son catches the bus, and he goes to school out on the southwest side, and he is taking driver's ed, and his driver's ed is probably by car less than 5 minutes from his school. But because of the rail system, he's got to come back from the Beltway in Bissonnette, come back to the Wheeler line over by Sears on Main Street.
Bus system,
yeah, and then go all the way back out there. So it takes him an hour and 30 minutes on the bus for something that you could drive in 5 minutes. And that just does not make sense to me.
Okay. Recently, Mayor White called for a possible vote, a public vote, on a study to change Houston's term limits laws. What is your opinion of that?
Well, that actually sort of surprised me. I don't know where it came from, but I think term limits, I understand why people want them. I understand why people wouldn't want them. I hadn't thought long and hard about them. I do know that I don't guess I'm a baby council member anymore. But when we first get here, we're learning how things work. And when we're not learning, we're then running. And so it doesn't give us a lot of time for continuity. I mean, 6 years in the scheme of things is just not a long time. I'd actually probably favor longer term, maybe three-year terms, and that way you're not, you know, working a year and trying to campaign and work a year, working a year and trying to campaign and work a year, as it is now. But I do think we need more time to do things because government is incredibly frustrating because it just moves so slow. I mean, it's like, I'm used to being on the Autobahn, and government is like traffic on 610. It's frustrating. And you hope that whoever comes in after you will take the ball that you started and try to move it farther down the field, but there's no guarantee that that will happen. And so I think it's real hard to help a city grow when it's done in such a piecemeal fashion.
One of the things that council will be taking up in another year or two is going to be redistricting its district lines, adding two more district members after the 2010 census. How would you like to see that process go? How do you want to see that done?
I would really like an accurate count. I suggested a budget amendment so that we would fund it. Because, again, you can always tell what's important to people by if you put your money where your mouth is. If we undercount, it's going to hurt us. We get federal dollars for how many people are actually here. So if the federal government thinks we have 10 people and we really have 20 people, then the money they give us for 10 is going to be insufficient for 20. And so I think that we need to put more money into ensuring an accurate count. Otherwise, I believe that we're still going to be underfunded for critical things like, food, or housing dollars. When HUD is determining how much money they give us, it depends on our population. If we're wrong on that, then we will never have sufficient housing to house the people that are actually here. Healthcare services, same deal. It's just a never-ending story of insufficient funds to cover who are really here. So anything that I can do, going out and speaking to people, helping with relations between various communities, because if you have some parts of the community who are afraid of other parts, they're not going to report that they're here, and that ultimately hurts us because when people, for example, are underinsured, they go to the emergency room. I learned that at the fire department. What we don't understand, something as basic as fire department gets a call, person has some diabetes-related ailment. Fire department goes out, paramedics or ambulance, people in the ambulance take the person to Bentob. Bentob, the ambulance cannot leave and go back into service until they are released by the hospital. In other words, a nurse has to intake the patient and fill out paperwork. But you have an emergency room full of people. So the paramedics and the ambulance people are just sitting out at the waiting room, just waiting. I was there one time, and the paramedic was there for like an hour waiting. So there could have been an emergency, but they can't leave. And that's what not having enough money and enough resources does to you. And we're paying them to sit and wait, but they can't leave. So it seems really simple, but it's not. It's super complicated.
Yeah, obviously, the census relates to federal money, but right now the city's budget is in kind of tight straits because of the nature of the economy, sales taxes, property taxes being down. How do we ensure that we have adequate resources for the things we want to do? And is the city taking the best approach towards that?
I'm not because of the way that I was raised, I'm not a do-what-you-want-to-do kind of girl. I'm a do-what-you-need-to-do kind of girl. And I think we need to do a better job of balancing needs versus wants. It's really touchy. We spend a lot of our budget on public safety to the tune of anywhere between 67 and 69 cents off every dollar. And then we take about 12 cents of every dollar to pay down debt, which leaves us about 21 to 23 cents of every dollar to do everything else. So when that is the reality of what you're dealing with. You really have to figure out what's important. I struggle all the time with trying to figure out what's a need and what's a want. Obviously, life and death things are needs. We need to deal with things where someone could lose their life. Other things that are needs, for example, are people becoming homeless, getting evicted, because we're going to have to deal with that, as opposed to, other things like water. And water is vital, but what I mean by that is like water rationing or something like that. Or, then you have this struggle with recycling. We want to recycle, but to someone in a neighborhood where, people are getting shot and killed, they're really not concerned about recycling. So we have to balance. We have to figure out who needs what, where. Police are always a big issue because no one ever thinks they have enough police. But I think before that, we have to deal with social issues, because the truth is people who live in stable neighborhoods are less likely to commit crimes. And it's just really hard, but I think we need not, we should not be so judgmental when it comes to trying to do social things, because for some reason people seem to think when you do social things it's not an efficient use of taxpayer money. When if you have someone who's hungry and they don't have somewhere to live, they're probably more likely to knock you over the head and take what you have so that they can have food or something. And we just, and then there's a whole infrastructure that is huge. I think infrastructure is a need that we have not paid nearly enough attention to. For the most part, even though our economy in Houston is not what it used to be, it is better than most places in the country. For that reason, I believe that people are coming to Houston because it is a great city to live in. When you have more people coming into the city is becoming denser every single solitary day, and people want to live in close. And our infrastructure, unfortunately, is 50 to 75 years behind. It's having old infrastructure is the equivalent of trying to suck a smoothie through a skinny straw. It doesn't matter how beautiful the stuff is you put on the land, the pipes that you put on these houses. The second it hits the ground, it's log jammed. So what does that mean? It means that your toilets flush just a little bit, slower. You don't have sufficient water pressure. Everyone in the house can't take a shower at the same time. You have an infrastructure designed for one residence that's now having to accommodate 10 or 20 residences. We can't do that. And we have got to find a way to fund more infrastructure, because this city cannot continue to grow. It can't continue to grow if you can't support the people that live there. You've got to get water in. You've got to get in potable water. You've got to be able to get water out. Our streets and our roadways have to work. People have to be able to get to and from places. We have to have a rail system. We've got to get some of these cars off the road. And we've got to provide more transportation options. All of these things are helpful. But it's complicated. It's not easy. If it were easy, we probably wouldn't have any problems, but it's really complicated.
What should the top priority for the new mayor we're going to elect this fall be?
I think the top priority for the new mayor, is between public safety, funding public safety, and which I think would be tremendous if we could get some kind of coordinated policing as opposed to having these fiefdoms, because we can never pump enough money into one agency, i.e. HPD, to keep us safe like we need to be. But we pay taxes to other agencies, so some policing agencies I don't think should just serve process. To coin a phrase from someone, so I don't want anyone saying I'm stealing their line, but I think when people are victims of crime, they don't care who shows up as long as they have a gun and a badge. They don't care if they're HPD, they don't care if they're the Sheriff's Department, they don't care if they're constables. That's one really big issue that I think we can do a better job on. But another issue that I believe we need to absolutely do a job on is increasing the stock of housing in the city, because we have a homelessness problem that's embarrassing, and we just don't have enough affordable housing. And the truth is, when you don't have stable housing, you're more likely to end up in places that no one wants to be. And we've got to pay attention to those two issues. And obviously those issues are quality of life issues. We've got to figure out how to move people around this city. We've got to do that. We've got to figure out how to pay for infrastructure. We've got to do that. I know that some people might get really upset, but I don't know, given the constraints on the budget and the sales taxes being low, as you said, I don't know how we don't have some kind of fund for drainage, flooding and drainage, because at some point we're not going to be able to get water into the city. We're going to use the water that we have to be able to sustain us. So public safety, probably then affordable housing, probably infrastructure after that, and quality of life, it sort of encompasses all of those things. Because if you fix public safety, your quality of life is better. If people have places to live, your quality of life is better. You know, if people can move around and the infrastructure can support new businesses and there's a greater tax base, then your quality of life is better. So those things are all important.
You have a couple of opponents in this fall's election. Why should the voters vote to give you a second term and not vote for one of your opponents?
The voters should vote to give me a second term because I have a list of accomplishments that have improved the quality of life for Houstonians. I believe that as a public servant, that I have an obligation to listen to the people, that I have an obligation to try to move the ball, figuratively speaking, as far down the field as the people ask me to. And if that means dragging people, kicking and screaming, then that's what I'm supposed to do. I believe the people are my team. I do not believe an elected body is a team, because when we go to you, to whoever's listening to this, and we say, will you please vote for us? We don't say, well, vote for us, and I'll push your issues if I can get everybody to agree with it. We say, vote for us, and we're going to try to help you get what you believe you need in your community. And I just believe if you talk to the people, for example, along the bayous, whose property values are now what they should be, they would say, we support Yolanda. If you talk to the, interestingly, in Belle Reve is a housing authority property that's filled with mostly Asian senior disabled people. I went to them. I'm obviously not Asian, but I'm a citizen of the world. And all I could think was, if I were a senior, I'd want somebody to help me. And so I pushed their issues so that they could have a place to live and have dignity. They support me. Now, I've helped people in Kingwood, the livable forest. We're trying to lay roads through Kingwood and divide it up. If the people who chose to buy their homes in Kingwood wanted to live in an urban area with a lot of roads, they would have moved into Houston proper. And so I spoke before the Planning Commission because I don't think Kingwood was ever designed to be Houston. So I try to push people's issues. That is what I do. And, you know, I think if you hear any complaints, you'll hear based on style, but I've always been a substance person. I really don't care the package that you're wrapped in. I care about what you do. So that's why I believe the citizens of Houston should send me back to City Council for a second term, because I will listen to you no matter how difficult it is, no matter if the fix is in and they want to do something else. I am not afraid to stand alone. And you just don't see that enough in government. And government should be challenged. We should ask government questions. We should require that we be transparent. And I am all of those things. And I think people are sick and tired of government just doing the same thing that it's always done. And quite frankly, I'm honored to have been called the conscience of council. I mean, government should have a conscience. I mean, government should not be unfeeling. And that is why I believe most people don't vote, because they believe government doesn't care. Well, if you elect me back to city council, I care, and I will fight for your issues. And that's just real, and I will use whatever skills I have to push your issues, whether it's something legal, whether it's the power of the microphone, whether it's writing an op-ed in a Chronicle, which they printed a number of my op-eds, whatever it is, I will use whatever skills available to me to try to help you. And that's all I think citizens want from us. And that's why I believe citizens would want for me to be reelected into city council at large, position number 5.
Okay. Councilmember Jones, General Andrew Jones, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks.